This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh and Brian Fernandez with the top business stories of the day. Now, several of us were at the World Capital Markets Symposium. Joyce, you were there over the past 2 days, and there were many people that were there on the ground. Some of the big names that spoke at the event, apart from Helen Clark, was the former finance minister of Greece, Yanis Varoufakis, as well as Farid Zakaria, host of CNN's Farid Zakaria GPS. What were your main takeaways, Joyce, from this event?
Yeah, sure. So one of the highlights from the event was the talk by former finance minister of Greece, Yanis Varoufakis. He was famously vocal about his views on the decline of capitalism and is no different at the event yesterday. So he said that globalized capitalism is in trouble, and this stems from the US and the EU, and there is a need for a new kind of internationalization of finance.
Yeah, we managed to interview Yanis on the sidelines of the event, and this is what he had to say about the decline of capitalism.
Capitalism is entering a deeper phase of crisis. We are still not out of the woods. 2008 is our legacy. 2008 is your generation's 1929, and we are still seeing the repercussions of that major financial collapse. I think that there is a lot to worry about, because we have the legacy of that crisis still with us, and we have not dealt with it at a time when the next crisis is hitting us, with the effect of the rise of the machines, technological innovations and artificial intelligence advances that are going to create serious problems for labor markets, especially in countries that rely on unskilled labor. We have to get our act together, and I'm afraid that our political systems are not doing it.
That was Yanis Varoufakis, former finance minister of Greece. He was also, and it was before that, a lecturer and academic in economics, and that was his main thing. He lasted only 162 days as a former finance minister. Mm. I did manage to catch him, get my book autographed. It's a book on the Greek financial crisis called Adults in the Room. I shook his hand and I said, could you please autograph the book?
Well, sure. Actually, speaking about adults in conversation, he mentioned that at the talk yesterday. He said that we need to have an adult conversation in Asia as to how to manage capital and trade flows that diminishes trade imbalance, because he also thinks that Asia is doing a better job than the US and Europe, which he says has become ungovernable.
Yeah, so make sure you tune in tomorrow for the Breakfast Grill when we have the full interview with Yanis Varoufakis.
Now, moving forward, what he also said is there's a couple of things. Now, one, we have to increase wages internationally across the board. Now, secondly, also a new Bretton Woods Agreement, really a new design for the monetary system. And there's a need to plan for the fact that machines will be doing a bigger portion of work. So AI is going to hit hard jobs very hard by 2020. More than half of the professions will be hit by the rise of machines. So the question is then, who will buy the goods that robots make? And when people are out of jobs and have no money, the robots have no needs for these goods.
Yeah, he questioned that at the talk yesterday and everybody laughed. Yeah.
So what about the panel that you most enjoyed, Joyce?
Well, one panel that stood out was the future of finance. That was on Tuesday. So all of them on the panel, majority of them bankers, they were realistic about the current situation that they are in. And they all recognized the underlying shifts in the financial system and the need for them to evolve, right? So we have Sir David Tweedy, chairman of International Valuation Standards Council and former chairman of International Accounting Standards Board. He said that there is a trust deficit and disconnect, citing Brexit as a result of that. And, interestingly, he also pointed out that 20 years ago, the average pay of British company CEOs was 20 times. Today, it is 130 times.
Times what?
The average pay. So, but that's a global thing. That's not just a restricted to...
Yeah, so he's talking about trust deficit, in corporate world. And then coming down to future of finance, Dato Sri Nazir Razak, chairman of CIMB Group, says it is a loud wake-up call. Today, what they have, regulation has made them boring. And, this quote was a good quote. He said, "Our competition is going in with big guns out there while we are like kids having to play in sandboxes." Right? So, basically he's saying that people, like customers, they love their Facebooks, but, banks are a necessary evil necessity. And, basically banks have to change to become sexy.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. I enjoyed Farid Zakaria's presentation because I think what he does, what he did there was to provide a story, a narrative that put all the factoids that we know about the world and we read constantly in the papers into a single, you know, framework. And he asked tough questions of how we're dealing with them and, or perhaps how we're not dealing with many of the challenges that are there before us.
Yeah, also yesterday there was a talk on panel on the ringgit, and Deutsche Bank for Asia Pacific chief economist Dr. Michael Spencer says that the ringgit is expected to weaken in the second quarter amidst a rising likelihood of the US raising interest rates.
Yeah, so there's also an anticipation of Bank Negara to raise the OPR or the overnight policy rate twice in the next 12 months. So that's a slightly different view from a lot of people.
Yeah, who said they expected just that one raise. What about the correlation between the ringgit and the yuan?
Yeah, so BNP Paribas Asset Management senior economist Chai Lo said at a panel yesterday that they've done research over the past, 15 years and discovered that the correlation between the Asian currency movements following the yuan has been rising, while the correlation between Asian currency movements against the US dollar and euro has decreased.
Yeah, so also in the Coop had a press conference and they said that they've become the first pension fund in Malaysia to be a signatory to the UN-supported Principles of Responsible Investment when it was signed in the symposium yesterday. So responding to a question from BFM, Coop CEO said that it is aiming to make 70% of its estimated $125 billion worth of assets under management as ESG compliant compared to 50 to 60% currently.
Okay, speaking about responding to BFM, there's also the story of Maidin. That's Sri Raman Dalan, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, has come out to say that hypermarket sales cannot be viewed as the only benchmark to gauge economic conditions of a country or its citizens. He was responding to a comment that Dato' Wira Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of Maidin Hypermarkets, had made on The Breakfast Grill last week. And here's an excerpt of that conversation that Maidin made with Melissa Idris.
You're essentially asking, where is all this growth if it's not
somehow
being reflected in retail sales?
Yeah, because when you see GDP numbers, I'm not denying there's growth, of course, the numbers are there, right? But in a normal country, what you see is that growth is domestic consumption. And domestic consumption, the basic is food, right? But hypermarket, supermarket, which control 50% of the grocery market, right? 50% is negative. So
what do you think explains this?
I think people just don't have money. Let's go to data. First quarter, Malaysia grew at 5.6%. Retail sales were negative 1.2%. Hypermarket had a negative 4.8%. That makes you wonder, how can a country grow? But hypermarket, which is the real basic consumption in the country, is negative.
That was Dato' Wira Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of Maidin Hypermarkets.
Yeah, so Dato' Sri Raman Dalan cited numbers from the Statistics Department that the share of hypermarket sales to retail sales is only 8%. So in terms of value, retail trade registered double-digit growth for three consecutive quarters in 2017. And in terms of volume, retail trade grew by 7.8% in the first quarter of last year, 11.5% in the second quarter, and 10.4% in the third quarter. And for the 11 months of 2017, retail trade increased just under 12% year-on-year to some 411 billion ringgit.
You know, but Joyce, the comparison, is it an equal one? Because I think if you listen carefully to what Amir Ali Maidin was saying, he was referring to groceries, right? He was saying groceries and food sales. And he says groceries represent some, hypermarkets represent 50% of grocery sales, not just the overall retail, which is a much bigger class of products, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so one of the things he also claimed, let's go back and revisit some of the numbers that he mentioned in The Breakfast Grill. So he claimed that in the first quarter of 2017, Malaysia's GDP grew by 5.6%, retail sales were negative 1.2%, hypermarket sales were negative 4.8%. So in the third quarter, Malaysia's retail sales, according to him, contracted 1.1%, and hypermarket business, in fact, dropped 5%.
Yeah, so other claims made by the minister, Ramadhanan, also suggested that one of the reasons behind slowing sales in some hypermarkets could be because customers have more choices to shop. He also said other indicators showed Malaysians in general have more money to spend, highlighting that 10% increase in domestic tourist expenditure to about 75 billion ringgit in 2016. You know, so
right. And also what's important to note is the minister is making reference to statistics coming out of the statistics department, whereas Dato' Wira Amir Ali Maiden is referring to internal numbers, things that Maiden itself generates.
Correct. And probably on the ground, like for him, because he's in the industry.
Yeah, so from a government's perspective, what the minister says in response to Maiden's claims that GDP growth is not fully reflected, he claims that GDP growth is not fully reflected in spending habits. So the minister, and I quote the minister, while GDP has its own limitations and may not be the perfect indicator of welfare and well-being of the people, it does seem to correlate pretty well with broader qualitative measures of prosperity. So his argument is as GDP grows, more jobs are created, household income increases, and so therefore people actually have more money.
I guess the question is whether with that more money, is it enough to buy the same basket of goods? Because you may have more money, right? But the same basket of goods may have shrunk. It depends.
Right. Yeah. And also if you make reference to, you know, Fariz Zakaria's presentation at the World Capital Market Symposium, he talked about the way in which economic recoveries have not and the rate of unemployment haven't followed each other in quite the same way as it used to, right? It used to be a couple of months there was a lag between recovery and jobs growth, and that gap has widened dramatically over the last couple of crises that global capitalism has had. And that's also a very interesting thing because we do know of discussions of jobless growth that happened.
Jobless recovery, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, also weighing into this controversy is the think tank, Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs Ideas. They've commented on the CRIM, the reiteration of the CRIM project, CRIM 2.0.
Now, according to them, they claim that CRIM 2.0 would distort competition in the market since there would be about 3.9 billion in ringgit in subsidization of food items sold. So they claim also that the move is anti-competitive and may crowd out small businesses in the long run.
Yeah, so Ideas economist Adli Amirullah said that it is unfair for small businesses that have to sell the same items at market price while CRIM has the privilege to sell it at a lower price with government subsidies.
Yeah, so in that, if the government wants to reduce the burden on the rakyat, he argues that they should find other alternatives to reduce the cost of living instead of intervening in the market.
Now, recall that CRIM 2.0 was launched on Sunday, and according to the Domestic Trade Cooperatives and Consumers Ministry, the goal is to sell over 100 products below market price.
Yeah, so both CRIM 1.0 and 2.0 have the same goal, that is to elevate the rising cost of living. But one key difference is that CRIM 1.0 sold unbranded goods, so they have the generic, you know, One Malaysia logo on some products. So for CRIM 2.0, they're going back to branded goods, right? So, but some of these goods will be sold below market price, as we've discussed, and at least, well, that's the promise.
So right now there's something like 50 products are being sold under CRIM 2.0. Four are controlled items, so it's sugar, rice, wheat, flour and cooking oil. The goal is to sell 100 branded items and all below market price. Now, CRIM 2.0 will be implemented in stores belonging to Tunas Manja Group and KK Mart. So a quick check on Tunas Manja, they've got about 35 stores. KK Mart has just opened its 240th store.
And I guess the question is where these stores are located. If you remember that grill with Melissa, the thing about Maiden was that he always talked about Kapit in Sarawak. And they were going all over. And it seemed to me, for him, the logic was if you're going to reduce the cost of living for people, you have to do it across the nation and you have to do it in a way that everybody can access those cheaper goods. Otherwise, in some ways, your policy initiative doesn't quite work.
Yes.
Now, let's take a look at Proton. They have a plan to turn around their fortunes.
Yeah, so Proton Holdings has drafted a 10-year plan that includes turning the company around as soon as practicable, retaking local market leadership, and becoming one of the top three car makers in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, so essentially the plan was drafted by the management team, headed up by the new CEO, Dr. Lee Chun Rong, basically from Geely Holdings Group. It is expected to present it to the government for approval.
Yeah, so in this business plan seen by Starbiz, Proton aims to cut costs across the board by 30% from this year, also wants to improve car quality and increase annual production gradually to 400,000 cars by 2027 from under just 100,000 units last year.
Okay, so let's put this in perspective. How many cars did they sell last year?
Well, last year they only sold slightly under 71,000 cars. And it's lower than 2016 when they sold just over 72,000, and it's a lot lower than the 204,900 sold by Perodua last year.
Yeah, so 400,000 from 71,000 is quite a leap, but I guess they're looking to do it within what, the next 9 years, 9-10 years?
Right, so Joyce, could you give us a sense of the key elements in this turnaround plan?
Well, basically, they're looking at cost cutting. So Lee recently directed auto parts suppliers to reduce their prices by about 30%. So they've been selling car components to Proton at 30% above market price. So that's one. And then from its manufacturing strategy, production expansion will be moved to Tanjung Malim rather than Shah Alam for cost and space considerations.
Now, one of the things they're also going to do is to focus on quality. So by the end of this year, Proton is expected to achieve the same quality standards as Geely cars in China. Now, also, they're looking at using Geely's advanced technologies jointly developed with Volvo in order to leapfrog Proton's product proposition and also attractiveness to the market.
Okay, so they're also looking at, from sales and marketing perspective, Proton, they will increase their sales centres to about 109 by October this year from the current 75. So that's a few more months to that. And talent, they're also looking to upgrade their capability of the talent and staff. So basically, talent, technology as well. Yeah, and also other goals. Within 10 years, Proton wants a 30% market share in Malaysia and 10% in the ASEAN market space.
Oh, that's an incredible ambition.
Well, let's hope that they do it, because hopefully that would mean lower on-the-road prices for Proton cars for consumers.
They also want exports to account for about 25% to 30% of annual sales.
Now, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the news and we'll be back for the Breakfast Grill. Our guest this morning, Helen Clark, former Prime Minister of New Zealand and Administrator at the UN Development Programme. She speaks to Tan Chung Han. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.